Welcome to this episode of Out of the Best Books, the podcast where we deep dive into classic literature and have conversations about what we've learned and discovered along the way. We love all things books and reading, and we want to share our love of the classics with you. We hope to inspire you to read along with us and join in the conversation. I'm Laura.
And I'm Amity. Let's get started.
So we finally got to the end of Anne of Green Gables. I kind of feel funny, like my mother-in-law is ahead of us. Like, she knows what book is coming, and she finished this book a couple days ahead of me, which is really funny. I finished it today, and I just, this book.
So my good. Heart.
Did you cry at the end?
I always do.
I know.
So yeah. Sad. She just builds it up and, like, takes your heart and rips it to shreds, man. Like, holy.
I know. It's so sad. And I think, like, being older, I don't know, and having older parents this time through, it like hit me different.
And it hit different, yeah.
Because the last time I read it, my parents weren't that old. And we weren't that old. It's been a few years, so I don't want my parents.
But that's the thing. It's like when you're growing up, you're like, my parents are never going to get old, because you see your grandparents. I could never imagine my mom and dad being old like my grandparents.
Never.
And which is wild, because when I was born, my grandparents would have only been like 60s. My grandma wouldn't have even been 60 yet. So they were actually pretty young, but I always saw them as old. And now my parents are like in their late 60s.
I remember my grandma being in her 50s. I'm not that far away from 50s.
You're like, no.
I do not feel like a grandma. And I don't, like, I do not see myself that way at all. The other funny thing is, like, when you're a kid, and this happens to me with people at church, I go to church with the same people I went to church with when I was a kid, okay?
Yeah.
And they look the same to me as they did 40 years ago. They were old then.
Yeah. And it, well.
But they weren't.
Like, you kind of, but when you look at pictures from back then, are you like, oh, okay. Yeah. There's a difference completely. Like, the people that were old when I was little, they looked the same, but
they weren't that old.
Yeah, they've just always been old, which is not fair, because then it makes you go, oh my gosh, that's like how I look to, like, the young kids in my sphere.
Yes.
They look at me and they're like, oh, there's an older mom. I'm like, oh, they think I am.
I don't feel old though. And like at school now, you know, because when we had the older four kids, we were the young people at school, and we were really young because we had kids really young. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like the grandma. The funny thing is like my niece has a child at school that's older than my daughter.
Oh yeah, that's true. That's wild.
Isn't that wild? Yeah. So she has a child that's a year older than my daughter. And mm-hmm. she's like, to me, she'll always be a kid. She's not a kid, but like, it's just weird to think like she was a kid when I was an adult.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I cannot accept the fact that my younger sisters are like not teenagers anymore.
I will always feel like a teenager. Always.
Don't tell me I'm not 18.
I was listening to a podcast recently that talked about these moms who were struggling with like organization stuff. And they're like, I still feel like I'm playing house. Like, it's all pretend.
Right? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, I just need to wait until I grow up and then I'll have all this figured out.
Yes. It's too late.
Dude. Well, that sucks.
Okay. Well, let's dive into this, because this book, I was telling you before we got on that my sister listened to our first episode and said, like, I sounded happier than I've ever sounded before. So apparently this book is my happy place. I just love it. It like makes you want more. And so I feel like as soon as I'm done, I mean, I finished it, but I feel like I want to just go on to the next one. So maybe I will.
Yeah, you can totally see why everyone was like, no, we need more Anne. And I'm sure, like, reading it, her writing is just impeccable. It's like every sentence, we've talked about it before, every sentence is just so meticulously thought out and written. And Anne is just such a big, she's got lots of big personalities in her book. So you can see how she would probably get exhausted with writing these. I don't blame her, but we need more Anne.
Yes.
So I'm glad that she gave us like seven books.
I'm gonna read more. I'll have to listen to them, but I'm gonna do it. Okay, so chapter 31 is called Where the Brook and River Meet. Now, where we left off before, it was summer vacation and she was like tired of studying. And so she put her books up in the attic and she's like, I'm not gonna touch them the whole summer. I'm just gonna enjoy myself. So now summer is over and it's time for her to get her books down from the attic. She'd had a great summer, but she's ready to go back to school. Anne and Marilla talk about how great of a minister, I think that's what that says, Mr. Allen is. Then they have this long conversation about why women can't be ministers. And like we talked about last week, they have these rules that are like, this is how things are done. And everybody has their own set of rules in their own mind. And Anne's like, women would be great ministers. I think this is funny. She's kind of like, we do all the work anyways.
Yes. And how much can we relate to that? I was like, oh, I've said it all the time. We're the ones like organize and carry out all the big things.
Yes.
So I guess in some ways, I mean, we got to leave something for the men. Sorry. Love men.
We got to do something.
Gotta
So,
do something.
and yeah, I just love that. She's like, we kind of do have everything anyways. And then Mrs. Lynde, that woman cracks me up. You love her and you hate her, right? I love how she says that Mrs. Lynde could do just as good a job praying than the superintendent does. And Marilla says, yes, I believe she could. She does plenty of unofficial preaching as it is. Maybe that's why women don't preach or aren't preachers.
Yeah, I mean, there's that.
Because
Okay.
we do it
Yeah, fair enough.
anyways, right?
We do it anyway.
Anyways, she says nobody
Just
has,
unsolicited.
that's right, especially with Mrs. Lynde. Nobody has much of a chance to go wrong in Avonlea with Rachel to oversee them. I thought that was really cute what she said about Mrs. Lynde. And then I also love this. Why does Mrs. Lynde make her want to be so wicked?
It so true? Okay. Has there ever been anybody in your life that they are just so grating that you just want to be bad to like get even with them, even though that is like illogical, but still.
That happens to me a lot with kids, other people's kids.
So true. So true.
It like just grate on you. And
Yeah.
like, and I think it has, it's kids that try to tell me what to do. Does that make sense? Like,
Yeah.
but yes, I think kids will do that to me. And even adults, like, I guess it's more kids for me. Kids that think they know it all and that they know better than you, like kids that will tell you how to drive. You're like driving at
Oh,
somebody else's
yeah.
kid somewhere, and they're like, one kid recently told me, you need to turn your blinker on. I was like
Yeah.
going to Dutch Bros, and I was like pulled off to the side. You know, like I wasn't on the road and I wasn't turning, and I was just sitting there. And this person was like, you need to turn on your blinker. And I was like, I got this. Anyways.
Oh my gosh. No, that's so. And you know what? I think it was when I was a kid that I felt that way about adults. Do you know what I'm saying? I
Yeah.
can't really because I just don't care anymore where other adults are concerned. Like, I don't care what they say or what they think. Who cares? But as a kid, like I had some people in my life that they were so judgmental that it was like, well, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm going to piss you off anyway, so I may as well just go for it. Like, go whole hog on this thing because.
Yeah, I just thought that was so cute that she's like, why does she make me want to be wicked? Mostly when I'm with Mrs. Lynde, I feel desperately wicked, and as if I wanted to go and do the very thing she tells me I oughtn't to do. I feel irresistibly tempted to do it. Now, what do you think the reason I feel like that? Do you think it's because I'm really bad and unregenerate? And Marilla laughs because she feels exactly the same way.
I
But she would never say it, right? And then she kind of goes into this, like, what Rachel means well. And she's, I think she says she like has a good heart. She means well. So she just doesn't know that she comes across. But then Anne goes in to thank Marilla for the flounce in her new dresses. And now that she has flounce in her dresses, she can concentrate at school because when she didn't, that was all she thought about, which I think is very funny. Like when there's
Also,
something,
so relatable.
yes, when you're a kid and there's something wrong with your clothes or something, and you're like, couldn't concentrate on anything else, that's all you're thinking about. I can totally relate to that.
I
Anyway.
mean, that's really why the whole, I mean, maybe it's not the entire idea behind uniforms, but it's one of the idea behind uniforms is that it makes it so that kids aren't worried about what they're wearing or how it compares to what their peers are wearing because everybody's dressed the same. So that way they can just focus on their school. Love them or hate them, I think that there is some wisdom behind uniforms. I'm just going to say that right now.
Well, then we wouldn't have to think about what we have to wear every day, and I would love that. So she also mentions that, like, there's so many questions to think about in the world. Like, she has so many questions, and when she gets questions answered, then there's just more questions. But at this point, all she's thinking about is the entrance exam, or they call it the entrance. She talks about how it haunts her even on Sundays. And especially, she'll have these dreams where Gilbert's name is on the list, on the pass list, and hers is not. So,
Yeah.
like, this is my
So
worst
funny. She is
nightmare.
obsessed, yeah.
Yes. So one day, Marilla just realizes that Anne is as tall as she is. And that, you know, and I was thinking this, they get her when she's 11, and that is really not very long. They do not have her, there's not much of her childhood left. I mean, it's great that she got a place to go and be loved, but it's like she just grows up so fast, and all of a sudden she's taller than Marilla.
Yeah.
And one night when she's out at a prayer meeting with Diana, Marilla starts crying and thinking about Anne being gone because the next winter Anne's supposed to go to Queen. They call it Queens. The Queen's College, I think, is what they call
Yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Marilla is also noticing that Anne is talking less. So we can kind of see like this evolution in Anne where she's like growing up and she kind of talks about it. I think she asks her, like, why are you talking less? And she's like, I don't know. I'm using less big words. You know, I used to want to impress people, but they're not that impressive. And I kind of like to just keep things in my own mind. And then also, the story club isn't existing anymore. She talks about how she uses way less flowery language in her writing. So she
Yeah.
really is growing up. And then that's when Marilla brings up the entrance exams. Anne talks about how, like, all of the students have some subject that they're struggling with, but they've all worked really hard. I love this. Anne's like, well, what will I do if I don't pass? And Marilla's like, well, you'll just try again next year. And she says, oh, I don't believe I'd have the heart for it. It would be such a disgrace to fail, especially if Gil, if the others passed. And I get so nervous in an examination that I'm likely to make a mess of it. I wish I had nerves like Jane Andrews. Nothing rattles her. It's because she doesn't care about anything. Like,
Totally. Yeah. Nothing. I mean, she does care because she's trying to work hard and pass the test and stuff, but she's not so competitive like Anne is. So she doesn't feel like she has to be the very top of the class.
yeah, and I think one thing we can notice here, and we can talk about this later in the chapters, is Anne, you see here how she's like, if I don't pass, it's the end of the world. It's the end of my world. Nothing, I don't know what I'm going to do. But then later on, she's like, it'd be fine. Like, she really is evolving, growing up. So cute. And I just love how many times we should have counted how many times she starts to say Gilbert.
I know.
Multiple.
Guilt the others.
Yes. Exactly. Okay, so chapter 32, the pass list is out. Anne is going to Brightwood for the entrance exam, and she's going to stay with Aunt Josephine. And Miss Stacy has told them not to crack a book while they are there. Okay, so I have a story, an interesting story to tell you. So I grew up learning classical piano, how to play classical piano. That was one of the rules was, on the performance day, you were not allowed to play your music.
Oh,
So,
interesting.
because the first time you play it in a day is the best, like it literally is. And then also, if anything goes wrong when you're playing it, that's what's going to go through your head when you're actually
So true. Yeah.
performing it.
Yeah, that's true.
It was so hard to not
I
play it.
bet. Because you want to be like, I just got to make sure that I can.
Yes, like
But
yesterday, but I don't know if I can today, and I don't know if my
yeah.
fingers are gonna work. And
Yeah.
like sitting there getting ready to play, knowing you hadn't practiced it that day was very nerve-wracking. But I just thought that was interesting that she's like, don't crack a book. Like, you've done, and that's what my teacher would say, like, you've done all the preparation. Like, there's nothing you can do this morning that is gonna make it
Yeah.
better. So, and that's how she kind of told them, like, you guys have done all the preparation. Nothing you read this morning is gonna make it any better. So,
That's really interesting. It kind of, so it makes me think about when you're training for a big race, whether it's a half marathon or a marathon. You train, 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 train. You're just so meticulous in your training. You focus on the fueling, the sleep, the hitting your tempo runs and your speed work and the long runs and everything is about time, right? Doing your strength training, all the things. But then, depending on the length of the race, 1 to 2 weeks before, you taper. Which means you're not doing nearly the workload. And like the week of, you're like eating, 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 and not running very much at all. And you feel like you're gonna go crazy. But it's all for a purpose because it's like you've done the training and now you need to trust the training and you have to take that time. You have to take that week or two of tapering and backing off in order for your body to be able to rebuild and be strong enough so that on race day, you can put it all out there. And it will. Because it remembers and you're still in shape, but you've got to take that time to like really back off and let your body recover. And I think that that's probably the same concept is like, don't pick up the books. You need to let your brain rest. Everything is there. You need to trust that everything is there.
So
So
interesting.
it really is. Yeah.
Like I never would have thought about that with running. And I would be nervous because I'd be like, I can't eat and eat and eat. I'm gonna be heavy when it's time to go run or
Well, it's not unusual to line up on race day being a little bit bloated, but that's okay because you need all that energy. And by the end of the race, you are not bloated anymore.
does it make you like so in my psychology class, we're learning about how like a little bit of, you know, they call it arousal. It's like a little bit of nervousness or whatever is good for situations like that. So does that kind of
Yes.
also happen because you're nervous because you haven't been running and you're like, can I do this? Can I do this? And then I don't know. Does it help build that?
No, I mean, it's interesting because I think that there probably needs to be a balance of nervousness and confidence that
Well,
you
yeah,
did do the
because
right thing.
there's like a curve. So it's like you will need a moderate arousal, not
Yeah.
huge, because then it hurts you.
Then it brings you down for sure. Yeah, it always makes me wonder if nervousness is tied to your adrenaline a little bit, you know, like just the right amount to pull it out and make you work really hard. And perform well.
You know, and I think in my class, we read about like marathon runners who don't ever run the full 26.2 miles.
Right, you don't. In your training, you never run 26 miles.
Nope, because that's when your adrenaline kicks in and you're able to do it.
Yeah. The
Anyways.
lot, which is wild because you usually just run up like your longest run is like between 20 and 22. So that means that there's like that 4 to 6 miles that's unexplored territory. You're like, I don't know, but you can totally do it.
So she goes to wherever, Brightwood, and the first night she's there, she writes Diana. At this point in the book, I think she's mentioned a couple of times that she doesn't like Josie Pye,
Oh
but
yeah.
it becomes like very clear through the rest of this book why she doesn't like Josie Pye.
She's such a brat.
Yes, and I thought this was really like everything she says about her is funny. First of all, we all know people like this,
Oh, yeah.
like can't say anything nice and are just like say things and you kind of look at them like, are you kidding me?
Oh,
Anyways,
my gosh. Yeah.
Josie said I looked as if I hadn't slept a wink, and she didn't believe I was strong enough to stand the grind of the teacher's course, even if I did get through. There are times and seasons, even yet, when I don't feel that I've made any great headway in learning to like Josie Pye. No kidding.
She's such an unlikable person.
If even if you do pass, I just don't think you have it in you to like keep going or be a teacher.
Yeah,
It's just
good
awful.
grief. And it's like, have you been around? Of course, Anne does, but she's gonna do everything that she can to
Knock her down.
knock her down
But
totally.
yeah, Anne is just, of course, we hear a bunch of times that she really is worried about the geometry exam. I would be too. The geometry was not my thing. Okay, so Anne returns. After they take the test, Anne returns to Avonlea. She just wants to sleep until this pass list comes out. She's like, I can't wait. That always happens to me when I'm waiting for something like that, like a medical test or something. You're like, I'm not a very good waiter. I cannot wait until, I don't know,
Oh,
I'm not very patient.
torture. Well, it used to be like with ACTs, with I took a personal training certification test You did. You had to wait like 2 weeks or like 6 weeks in some cases.
The AP tests, like, and she would take them like in the spring and they wouldn't know. I think she took them in the spring and they found out in July. It was like months.
Yeah, which is wild because I feel like there's so many other tests now, but AP tests, I guess, have not quite caught up.
No, I think they have to be graded because they write. So like a human has
That's
to like
true.
learn,
Yeah, good point.
but
Yeah.
that's a long time. So she says, I'd rather not pass at all than not come out pretty well up on the list. Let's see. And Diana knew she meant that success would be incomplete and bitter if she did not come out ahead of Gilbert Blythe. So that's what she means. Like, all I care about is beating him out. I love it. All the kids have bets about which one's going to come out on top. And here we go with Josie again. Josie Pye had said there's no doubt in the world that Gilbert would be first. And she felt that her humiliation would be unbearable if she failed. So she's like, I can't prove Josie right. Oh my
That's
gosh.
so horrible when you feel like there's people like literally, they really don't want you to succeed. You know, like that's crazy.
It's jealousy, though. I mean, it has to be that Josie's just jealous. I don't know. That's just crazy, though. Anne wants to do well because she really wants to make Matthew and Marilla proud, especially Matthew. I love how she writes. She haunts the post office every day. And then finally, one day, Diana comes running with a paper in her hand. She's running up to the house. Anne had passed, and she had also tied with Gilbert for first. And there were 200 people behind them. Quite a feat,
Such an
right?
accomplishment, yeah.
So all the kids had passed, all of them had passed, the ones that live in Avonlea. Josie just barely had passed. Anne's probably like, good.
Sweet revenge.
Yes.
Although it would have
So,
been better if she just hadn't passed at all, but it was all kind of a reflection on Miss Stacy, so she did need to
yes,
pass for
she
that.
did her job. So they run out to tell Matthew, and Matthew says, I knew you could beat them all. And Marilla says, you've done pretty well. Trying to hide her pride because Mrs. Lynde is standing there. And so she doesn't want to be proud in front of Mrs. Lynde. And Mrs. Lynde says, I just guess she has done well. And far be it from me to be backward in saying it. You're a credit to your friends, Anne. And that's what, and we're all proud of you. So they all love her,
Yeah,
even
I know.
Mrs. Lynde.
I love it so much because, you know, like you mentioned, we see a huge evolution in Anne, but also in everybody around her. They love her. She's one of them. And it's so sweet because that's what she needed her whole life. She spent 11 years not being needed or wanted. Well, she was used for sure, but not being wanted or loved by anyone. And now in just 4 years, like she has a home, she has community, she has family, she has surrounded by love and support, and just makes all the difference in the world. Like, watch her thrive, you know? It's
I
amazing.
love it.
I love this part of the movie. It's so good. So I'm just gonna quickly summarize. So this one is called The Hotel Concert. So earlier in the book, it had mentioned the White Sands Hotel and how benefits would be given there frequently. And like all these wealthy people, especially Americans, would come and they do like charity events and there'd be recitations and sort of concerts and things. Well, Anne has been invited to come and recite. A lot of the people of Avonlea are participating. And so a lot of the people are going to be there. For whatever reason, Marilla and Matthew are not going. I can't remember exactly why. But so Anne has a special dress for it. It's her white organdy. And Diana helps her get all dressed. So they head out there. Well, it's not necessarily Avonlea, but there's lots of people from around Prince Edward Island that are performing. So they kind of know them. So Marilla and Matthew were not able to be there, but they are very proud of her, even though up to that point Marilla had been like, oh, this is all just nonsense, you know. But they were very proud of Anne for being asked to recite. It's a big deal. And she has her plan for what she's going to recite. She wears these special beautiful pearl beads that Matthew had given her, and Diana does her hair and tucks a little white flower in. Diana says, there's something so stylish about you, Anne. You hold your head with such an air. I suppose it's your figure. Anyway, we just keep getting all these little hints dropped that Anne has really turned into a beautiful young woman. Like she, you know, maybe has a different look than a lot of them, but she's very lovely, very attractive. So she heads to White Sands. As soon as she gets there, She sees all the wealthy people with their silk and their diamonds and their fancy hair, and they're just the way they carry themselves. They have this air about them. And then she feels so just like homely. She looks down at her dress that she thought was so beautiful. And she was like, I think she still likes it, but it just is kind of pales in comparison to all this silk and everything and lace. And so she wants nothing more than to just be in her little East Gable back at Green Gables. But the time comes, everybody sits down, and she's sort of sitting on the stand with these important people and these women who are really looking down on all the quote unquote country bumpkins that are there and, you know, not so fancily dressed. It also happens that there's a woman there, Mrs. Evans, I believe her name was, who is an elocutionist. So she is excellent at reciting and is very dramatic in the way that she delivers her poetry and things. So Anne is very intimidated by the entire scene. She's like, there's a woman here who's like an actual professional. Like, why am I even doing this? You know, like,
She's
I'm
like,
gonna seem so. Go ahead.
I'm going home. She's like, I mean, she kind of says, I think I should just leave. Like,
Yeah,
what am I even doing here?
I think she was ready to turn and run for sure. And then just like the way that people were looking at her and talking about things. So the professional elocutionist gets up and does it, and after she's done, Anne puts her hands over her face, says she could never get up and recite after that.
Yep.
Never had she ever thought she could recite. So my question is, have you ever had an experience like that where you just felt like, why am I even here? Like, I am not good enough at all.
Yeah, with piano.
Really?
Like, yeah, a couple of times, just like wanting to just leave.
Hmm.
Like, I don't want to go through with it. I don't know. Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel really prepared, and sometimes, I don't know, like, how can I get out of this? Like, I don't really have a problem speaking in front of people just because if I have something in front of me that I can read or like I have
Or at
notes or
least an
something,
outline or something, yeah,
yes. Then I'm
for sure.
fine. But like for me, playing the piano, and if I have music in front of me and I can play it easily, then it's fine. But like
Yeah.
when I was a child and we had to memorize stuff, I would be like convinced I was just gonna get up there and forget it.
Yeah, I remember piano recitals being like the scariest thing
Yes.
ever because I have hereditary tremors anyway, so my hands always shake. And then if I'm stressed or nervous, they shake
Worse.
even more and kind of need them to function when you're trying to play the piano and hit all the right keys.
And like
So
I'll notice that I don't have that, so normally I don't shake, but like if I'm playing something that is hard and I'm nervous, my hands shake. And you're like, you're watching your hands shake and you're like, this is not good. This is not going well. And like a couple of times I played something at church that was hard and I would just kind of like pray that it would go okay, you know? And then I'd get sit down and one of the kids who had been listening to me play at home all the time would be like, well, that went better than it does at home. It
I
did. Kids will humble you, like.
They sure do. They're very honest.
Yeah, how about you? Like, do you have trouble speaking in front of people or anything like that?
I mean, it doesn't bother me at all to speak in front of people. If there's any emotion that I'm sharing or something that's personal, then I will get emotional, and that drives me crazy because I do not like to cry, and I really don't like to cry in front of other people. So I think I get nervous that I'm going to cry. But the actual speaking part doesn't make me nervous. Singing in front of people does make me nervous. So when I was a junior in high school, what we did, I don't know if they do this anymore, but there would be the theme song for a prom or whatever, and they'd have the students try out to be the one to sing it at like the school assembly and at the dance and everything. So for my junior prom, the song was Everything I Do It For You. Okay, right. So it's like it's a guy. And but I was like, I want to, it's my junior year and I love to sing, so I'm gonna try out for it. And at the little audition, there were so many kids my age trying out for it. And all of them were very like notable singers, and everybody would like praise them to the skies. They're the good singers and everything. And there were guys trying out for it that were good singers. And I was like, yeah, it was one of those moments that I was like, I just want to leave. I want to run because why am I even here? So I remember getting into the audition room and just singing my heart out and putting all my emotion into it. And I got the part.
Cool.
I got to sing it in front of the entire school. It's great.
That's exciting.
So, yeah, that was fun. That was my moment that I was like, all right, Anne, I understand.
Yeah,
You're like, everybody's better than me. Why am I even here? Why did I think I could do this?
I
But,
think that too. Like, and I think the thought that would go through my head would be like, why do I do this to myself?
yeah.
Like, I said I would do this. What was I thinking? I'm out.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, there's been lots of times I'm like, can I fake illness? Can I do that so I can get out of this?
I
I
think
never
people
do.
do. I never have, but
I know lots of people do for sure, but she gets up, her knees are trembling, her heart is fluttering. Suddenly she sees Gilbert Blythe across the room. And he has this look on his face, a smile which seemed to Anne at once triumphant and taunting. It really wasn't. Gilbert was really just like happy to be there, happy to see Anne up there, you know? It was really a smile of support, but she almost needed it to seem like haunting smile. And so that's what she saw. And so she used that as fuel to be like, I am not going to let him see me fail. So I'm not going to fail. I'm going to succeed. And so she did. Like, she put all of her passion, all of her everything that she put into her recitation, and she like brought the house down to the point that they wanted an encore. They wanted her to do more. The ladies who had kind of been mocking the people of Prince Edward Island before, they were just gushing over her. They're like, "You are incredible." People want to hear more. So she went up and she did this other short little poem for an encore, and so many compliments. Even the professional elocutionist was like, "Anne, amazing." It was a good time. And I think it was a big confidence booster for Anne. On the way home, all the girls are talking about, wouldn't it be amazing to be rich, just like all those women there, you know, the silks and the diamonds and the feathers and, you know, just have all the money that you want to do whatever you want. And Anne says, we are rich. Why, we have 16 years to our credit and we're happy as queens and we've all got imaginations, more or less. Look at that sea, girls, all silver and shadow and vision of things not seen. We couldn't enjoy its loveliness anymore if we had millions of dollars and ropes of diamonds. You wouldn't change into any of those women if you could. Would you want to be that white lace girl and wear a sour look all your life as if you'd been born turning up your nose at the world? Or the pink lady, kind and nice as she is, so stout and short that you'd really no figure at all? Or even Mrs. Evans with that sad, sad look in her eyes. She says, I don't want to be anyone but myself. Even if I go uncomforted by diamonds all my life, I'm quite content to be Anne of Green Gables with my string of pearl beads. I know Matthew gave me as much love with them as ever went with Madame the Pink Lady's jewels. Sorry, I read just a lot, but I just thought it was so sweet and beautiful and a wonderful perspective that when you're happy with your life, you're completely rich. And
That's the key to happiness.
it is, and recognizing everything around you that is there and blesses your life. So,
I, like you said, I love this part in the movie, and I was kind of sad that it wasn't in the book. But when Gilbert, at the end of her, when she's done and they're getting ready to encore her, he's sitting with probably Josie Pye or Ruby Gillis or somebody, and she's done. And he gets up and he's like
yeah, he's like
clapping
the first
bigger
one to
than,
stand up.
bigger than anybody. And like whoever's standing next to him kind of looks at the girl, looks at him
Yeah, it
like,
was Josie. Yeah.
yes,
Yep.
I love it. So cute.
Did too. It
He's
was
in love with her.
great. He totally is. He always has been.
Oh, and then the other
Okay.
thing I noticed in this was, remember how she is riding in the, like that one boy is interested in her and takes her to the concert. So she
Yeah.
rides in the wagon or what would you call it? Carriage, wagon, whatever. And he
Yeah.
wants her to sit in the front, but he's like totally uninteresting. and doesn't even know how to talk to her. So that's
Yeah, he
funny.
just sits there. And even like during the concert and the dinner and everything, he kind of like hides away.
Yes.
So
He doesn't know what to say to her. It's cute.
not really Anne's level. Okay, chapter 34 is called A Queen's Girl. Anne is getting ready to go to Queens and everybody's kind of sad, but they're also helping her get ready. And Marilla has gotten this beautiful green fabric that they're going to make up into a beautiful dress, which you referred to it before, but Marilla is much more on board with Anne being very fashionable now. I think that's really sweet. She wants to do everything that she can to help Anne to feel good and to look good and all that. It's at this time, of course, because Anne is getting ready to go, that Marilla is remembering little Anne, who first came to Green Gables in her yellowish brown wincey dress. And it just makes Marilla cry because she thinks back to that sweet and innocent little girl. And probably part of her is going, oh my gosh, I love Anne so much. What if we hadn't taken her in? Like, what if we'd sent her back? Because they were that close to sending her back for sure. And then their lives would have been completely different. And so part of her tears is probably going, well, glad we dodged that bullet, you know? Marilla talks to Anne and she says that she's grown so tall and stylish and so different altogether. And but what Anne says, she's like, I'm not a bit changed. I'm only just pruned down and branched out. The real me back here is just the same. It won't make a bit of difference where I go or how much I change outwardly. At heart, I shall always be your little Anne who will love you and Matthew and dear Green Gables more and better every day of her life. Of course, the day comes that Anne has to leave and everybody's super sad. Marilla like buries herself in her housework and Diana is sad. And it turns out that at Queens, so Queens is in Charlottetown, which is where the old Miss Barry lives, but the college is too far from her house for Anne to stay with her. And so she has found her little boarding house that is very reputable and everything. And so that's where Anne stays. And at Queens, she finds that she is once again in the same class as Gilbert Blythe, which is, she loves it because for her, it is the friction that she needs to succeed. Like she needs that bit of competition for her to, like just work her ever loving butt off.
Yeah.
Like she's just, you know, and keep working. But I think this is really funny. She sees Gilbert in her class. She notices that he looks awfully determined, but then she says, what a splendid chin he has. I never noticed it before. That was hilarious. I was like, I have to say, I don't know. I mean, like, unless somebody has a really wonky chin, like, that's not the first thing I notice. But, you know, Anne is different. She finds that she's really lonesome. And so she's determined to make some friends, which she does. And she's really, really good at making friends. She's in her room, though. And here we come back to Josie Pye. But Anne is so lonesome that she's like, oh, there's Josie. You know, she's like so happy to see her. And Josie's like, I suppose you're homesick. Some people have so little self-control in that respect. I have no intention of being homesick. She goes around on and she's like, basically, she's there to get some of Marilla's cake from Anne. Somebody, a kid that she knows, Frank Stockley, had asked about the redheaded girl. And Josie was like, I told him that you were an orphan and nobody knew anything about your past. You know, just like so degrading in every way that she possibly can be. Even it's like, well, who cares if she's an orphan? She couldn't help that. Who cares if nobody knows anything about her past? But she like uses it and weaponizes it all the time. Anne is like, well, I actually think I'd rather be alone than with Josie, actually. So, but then Jane and Ruby show up. So, and they're good friends. They're good girls. And then just sort of the last thing is that it comes out that there's going to be all the students. I kind of love it because there's always sort of like this underlying competition with everybody. They're either working for the Medal of Honor or something like that. What was it called?
I don't know. It was just like they called, said it was a medalist,
The,
but
yeah, either winning a medal or working for the Avery Scholarship, which would basically pay for all of their college at Redmond, which is a huge deal. So that's something that all the students are working really hard for. I guess it's sort of, it's mostly based on how you do in English and English literature. So Anne's like, all right, you know what? I think I might have a chance. And so that's something that not only is she trying to beat out Gilbert, she's now trying to also win the Avery Scholarship. So That's where we are.
This reminded me of when I was in college, I kind of had the attitude of Anne. Like, not that I didn't, clearly when I was 20, I didn't need to get really good grades, but like I would load my schedule up and I was just like determined to get through it and get done quick. And so I would take a lot of credits and I would be like, in the beginning, I would be excited about all the classes that I had coming up, right? I'm not like that anymore.
Oh, life changes you.
This just brought back a lot of memories of like being in college and getting excited to register for my new classes and like thinking about how many credits I could get done. And that's kind of how the her and Gilbert are, because they basically do 2 years in one, and they're also trying to win these awards. And
Yeah.
so they're incredible.
Yeah,
Amazing. And
totally.
to think that when we started this book, they were both behind.
Yeah, like a long ways. And
Yeah.
isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was like 3 or 4 years behind. Anne was way behind because she never really had good schooling at all. And they both just worked so hard. And again, they sort of used the friction of each other to help them rise.
I know.
Kind
I
of
love it.
cool. Yeah.
And I love that too, that they like had this kind of a friendly rivalry. It wasn't really friendly,
Yeah.
but
They
kind
never spoke to each other, but in their hearts, they knew that they were helping each other succeed,
Yes.
I
I
think.
love it. Okay. So chapter 35, The Winter at Queen's. So Anne in the last chapter was pretty homesick, but now she's kind of getting in the groove of things and she's less homesick. As long as the weather is okay. So basically up until their Christmas holiday, all of the kids in Avonlea come home every weekend and they all kind of travel home together. I don't know how they got there, but they would at the end or whatever, they would walk together. And Gilbert is usually walking with Ruby. Now, and I think they said in some other chapters that Ruby is like the most beautiful,
Like she's really pretty, huh?
yeah, of all the kids. She's also not the smartest. So Anne kind of is like, I don't really get this. I don't really think she's his type, but okay, whatever. This was super funny. Ruby Gillis told Jane Andrews that she didn't understand half the things Gilbert Blythe said. He just talked like Anne Shirley did when she had a thoughtful fit on. And for her part, she didn't think it any fun to be bothering about books and that sort of thing when you didn't have to. She's like, I don't understand what he sees in her. But and Anne is now just wishing that her and Gilbert can be friends. Like she's kicking herself for that day on the water when she was like, no, don't, we're never going to be friends. Don't ever talk to me again. Okay. So Anne, like you said, had made a couple of friends at school. Now that the Christmas holiday has passed, the kids aren't going back to Avonlea anymore. Anne and Gilbert, they still have this little rivalry going on, but none of the other students in the class know about it. This is just kind of like a personal thing between them. It also mentions that it's not really a bitter rivalry anymore. It's kind of friendly. She usually spends Sundays with Aunt Josephine. And the term is coming to an end, which means that their exams are getting closer. Aunt Josephine does mention that Anne is changing. She's kind of not as, she's just not the same. She's not as like
Yeah.
exciting anymore. But she says that that Anne girl improves all the time. And she's like, I get tired of these other girls. They're not the same. Like Anne has something in her that is different than these other kids. And I love that she says, there's something about her that makes me love her. And I like people that make me love her because then I don't have to work to love them. Like it's just easy.
Which is true. Like it's easy to love people who are easy to love.
Exactly. I just thought that was so spot on. And like that's kind of what Anne talks about with Josie. She's kind of like, hey, I'm done trying to love her. She makes it hard and I'm kind of done. They're kind of talking about how like the end of the term is coming. Anne knows she's gonna pass. She's like, passing isn't the issue here. She just wants to come in first. But she says, girl, sometimes I feel as if those exams meant everything. But then when I look at the big buds swelling on those chestnut trees and the misty blue air at the end of the streets, they don't seem half so important. And I think that's kind of, this
Yeah.
is showing growth in her. Like she's like, and sometimes we get in those modes where it's like something is coming up and it's going to be the end of the world or it's like the biggest thing. And then you kind of step back and look and go, no, it's not. Like the world's going to keep turning.
We live in a great big wide world, and our problems sometimes seem really huge to us, but they're really not that big in the grand scheme.
And
They
she
just take
just,
a step back.
you know, I mean, we find out later how much she just loves. I don't know. It's like for her, what she has is enough now. Kind of. I mean, she's still like gonna keep trying to achieve, but like if it all went away and all she had was Matthew and Marilla and Green Gables, it would be fine. I think that's just so sweet. So, like I said, Anne is pretty sure she's gonna pass, but the other girls are a little more worried about it. And here's another Josie Pye quote. She says, "I don't care. If I don't pass this year, I'm coming back next. My father can afford to send me." And Frank Stockley says that Professor Tremaine said Gilbert Blythe was sure to get the medal, and Emily Clay would likely win the Avery Scholarship.
Oh gosh,
Like,
yeah,
dig,
there it
dig,
is.
dig, right? And then Anne's response is great. She says, "That may make me feel badly tomorrow. But just now, I honestly feel that as long as I know the violets are coming out all purple down in the hollow below Green Gables and that little ferns are poking their heads up in Lover's Lane, it's not a great deal of difference whether I win the Avery or not. I've done my best, and I begin to understand what is meant by the joy of strife. Next to trying and winning, the best thing is trying and failing. Girls," and then she's like, "Don't, let's not talk about the exams." That is so,
So good.
yes, if we don't try, we do fail. I just love that.
Yeah. So may as well try because there's still going to be growth in the trying. What
Yeah.
does she say? There's joy in the strife and there's growth in the trying. So that way, no matter what, you don't fail, you just learn.
Yeah, I love that. Next to trying and winning, the best is trying and failing. So good. But
It is.
Josie, ugh, she really gets her digs in these last few chapters. Like,
She does.
she kind of comes out as the villain. Okay, so chapter 36, The Glory and the Dream. So the results are out and Anne can't bear to look. And that was the interesting thing is like the last time that she was waiting for the results, she was like the post office every day. And this time she's like, "I'm not gonna look. When you guys see the results, come find me. You can tell me about it." And she's walking on campus and her heart sinks when she sees Gilbert on the shoulders of some other boys and they're shouting, "Hurrah for Blythe, the medalist." And then they see her and they start yelling, "Three cheers for Miss Shirley, winner of the Avery." So, despite what Josie says, she did win the Avery, which you said, like you said, is like a scholarship, right? So they'll just keep paying for her to go to school. So Marilla and Matthew come for the graduation and Miss Barry is there also. And they're just so proud of her. They talk about how proud they are of their little Anne. And then Anne goes home with them back to Avonlea, and her and Diana are like so excited to be back together again. And I love this. And another Josie one. Diana says, "I thought you liked that Stella Maynard better than me," which is one of the girls that she made friends with at school. And she says, and then Diana says, "Josie Pye told me you did. She said you were infatuated with her."
Of course, Josie Pye said that.
She tried to make everybody
Her.
mad.
Yeah. And turn everybody against each other. She's all about the drama. Good grief.
Exactly. At this point, what Anne's plan is to do is to go back and do another year of college. And Gilbert's father can't afford to send him back to college for another year. And so he is going to try to get the teaching spot in Avonlea for the next year. And he basically has to stop and earn money so he can go back to college. Anne thought, okay, so Diana tells her this. And Anne is kind of like, "Oh, I thought Gilbert was going to go to Redmond with me next year." Like, this kind of surprises her. The next morning at breakfast, Anne notices that Matthew does not look well. He kind of looks gray. And then we kind of find out that Marilla is also struggling with her eyes. So Anne says, "Okay, I want today. Today I'm going to enjoy, but for the next 3 months while I'm here, like I'm going to do all the work and you're going to get some rest." She's just not feeling well. So the rest of the day is absolutely wonderful. Anne visits all of her favorite spots. And she at the end of the day, she helps Matthew bring in the cows and they have like a sweet little talk. She mentions how she'd wished that she had been a boy so that she could have helped Matthew all along, like he wouldn't have had to work. And he says, "Well, now I'd rather have you than a dozen boys, Anne. Just you mind that. Rather than a dozen boys. Well, now I guess it wasn't a boy that took the Avery scholarship, was it? It was a girl, my girl. I'm gonna cry. My girl, my Anne that I'm proud of." Oh, what a man. And I was really mad that he died so early. I kind of thought it was in the next book, and so like I paid Audrey to pay read this a few months ago. I paid her $50 to read it, and she was like, "You didn't tell me that Matthew died," and I was like, "I forgot. Sorry." I thought it was later.
I kind of love that though, because that means that she was actually invested in the book and she cared. So that's good.
And like the thing is Matthew is such an important character that you
Yeah.
think that he is in the book longer or in the series longer, I
Yeah.
guess.
You can't imagine Anne of Green Gables without both Matthew and Marilla, because it always
Yes.
says Matthew and Marilla. So how can
Always
it
think
be
about it.
the story without Matthew? Yeah.
Just the last sentence. It was the last night before sorrow touched her life. No life is ever quite the same again when once that cold, sanctifying touch has been laid upon it. And she's had a lot of sorrow in her life.
Oh, she has. It hit a lot different because she has learned what it really means to have somebody love her unconditionally. And that's what Matthew has done this entire time.
I'm sorry that you have to do this chapter.
Yeah. So 37 is the Reaper whose name is Death. And this is the very next day. And Matthew was just, he's standing in the porch doorway. And all of a sudden, and Marilla's like, Matthew, what's the matter? Matthew, you know? And Anne is walking up with some of her flowers, and she sees that Matthew is sort of like frozen in the doorway. He's got a newspaper in his hand, and his face is like gone gray. And both Marilla and Anne basically leap for him, but they can't get to him before he just collapses. It just happens that so they grab Martin, the hired man. Mrs. Lynde is there. They get the doctor. Mrs. Lynde, or Mrs. Lynde. I don't. It says Mrs. Lynde. It's Rachel. She comes over and she looks at him and she's like, I don't think there's anything that can be done, you know? And that's the moment that both Marilla and Anne realize that Matthew has died. I don't think we brought this up,
No,
but
I meant to.
the,
Sorry.
oh, no, it's okay. So, the doctor comes and sort of does like this initial autopsy, and he's like, the death was spontaneous. Like he didn't feel any pain. It was brought on by a horrible shock. And we remember that his heart was already pretty weak and he'd been having a lot of health problems anyway. But there was this big shock that had just brought everything together and it killed him right away, which is wild. But basically, all of their money was in Abbey Bank. That's where their father had banked for years and years, and so that's where they kept all their money. They kind of felt like maybe they should take it out and move it someplace else, and they're like, no, it's gonna be fine. Well, he had just read in the newspaper that that the Abbey Bank had failed, and so there's all their savings and all their money, and that sent such a shock to him that it probably just completely stopped his heart and it killed him right away. Of course, it's a horrible time. The Barrys come over and they stay with Anne and Marilla that first night. You know, Diana's like, Anne, do you want me to stay with you? And Anne's like, I think you'll understand if I say no. Like she hadn't been alone since it had happened, and she just wanted a moment to be with her thoughts and, you know, sort of process all that. She hadn't cried yet up to that point, but she hoped that she would. And it is in the moment that she thinks back to the day before, the last evening when Matthew had said, my girl that I'm proud of. She thinks of that and the tears flow freely. And Marilla comes in, and of course, Marilla has been crying and everything, but she gathers Anne up in her arms. She's like, it's not right for us to carry on. So, you know, it's fine. Like, not everything that you do is a sin. But Anne even says, she's like, just let me cry. Anne says, it's our sorrow, yours and mine. Oh, Marilla, what will we do without him? And Marilla is like, I'm so glad you're here, Anne, because we have each other. Like, what would I do without you? You know, she's like, I know I've been like strict and harsh, but I love you. I love you so much, you know. She says, I love you as dear as if you were my own flesh and blood, and you've been my joy and comfort ever since you came to Green Gables. So it's sort of her way of being like, you are my daughter. Really sweet. Of course, they have like the funeral and everything, and life starts to go on. And it doesn't seem right that it should. When Anne laughs at something or finds something joyful or happy, she almost feels like she's betraying Matthew and his memory, which is really interesting. She has this conversation with Mrs. Allen, and she says, Mrs. Allen says, we resent the thought that anything can please us when someone we love is no longer here to share the pleasure with us. And we almost feel as if we were unfaithful to our sorrow when we find our interest in life returning to us. I kind of remember, not kind of remember, I absolutely remember when my grandpa passed away. And he's like the sweetest, best man in my life ever. And when he passed away, I remember driving to his funeral and being like, why is everybody going about their lives as if nothing is wrong? You know, like, how can everybody else be living normally and going to a restaurant and going to the store and walking their dog and doing all these things when my grandpa is gone and there's so much sorrow? So how can anybody else be happy? But you do, you like, it's not like you move on, but you do move forward. Have you lost anybody very close to you?
My grandpa, my grandma's. I don't know. I mean, I don't remember feeling that. Like, I guess I was just kind of like, it wasn't a shock. I mean, it was and it wasn't. Well, one of my grandmas died of Alzheimer's, and that was, we knew that was happening for years
Yeah.
and years and years
Yeah.
before. But the other
That's sad to
one
know.
that I actually was really close to kind of died suddenly, but I don't remember feeling that. I was an adult, so I don't know if that makes a difference, but when my sister lost a baby, that's how I felt, was watching everybody else and going like, how are you guys, how is everybody in this world functioning? Don't you know that like our world has just crumbled, 100% crumbled, and we couldn't, like, it was the first time in my life I'd ever not been able to eat because something bad, like I was so sad that I couldn't eat, you couldn't sleep, you'd wake up and think, oh, it's real. You
Yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, so that's the first time that that happened. That was like 15 years ago, I think. It was a shock.
Really? Yeah. And maybe that's a big part of it too, is when it's something that you are not prepared for at all, when it's something that's so sudden, you know, like with your grandma's, maybe, you know, the one with Alzheimer's, you knew it was coming. It's still sad and it's hard, but you know it's coming. So it's like your body and your mind has time to kind of process and prepare a little bit. And maybe the other grandma was quite old. I mean, I don't know.
She had cancer,
Okay.
and basically she went in and had one good dose of chemo and it killed her. But
Oh, wow.
so I don't know, like it was kind of shocking, but I don't know if I was just like kind of, so I don't know. I just was like, well, I didn't expect her to live forever, so I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering though. I was really upset. I just don't remember. Oh, how old were you when your grandpa died? So you
Don't
were an
know.
adult with children, with
Yeah,
kids.
I was an adult. Yeah. But it was very is and he was 83, like it's not like he was 60 or something. But it was still kind of unexpected. Like he hadn't been doing very well, but he'd had some health problems off and on, but it was just one of those things where like, oh, grandpa's always going to be here.
Yeah.
'Cause he always pulled through.
And I was really
He
close
was
to my
like,
grandma, the one that died from cancer. I was really close to her. And so I don't know. I would have thought that I would have been more upset, but there's something wrong with me.
No, like there's lots of things. I just don't cry either, but
I cried. I just don't remember it being like devastating.
Okay. Yeah.
You know
Well,
what
there's
I
not,
mean?
yeah. I don't think that that means there's something wrong with you. I think everybody just like processes and handles things differently. Yeah, they're just feeling guilty about life going on, but it does. And Dr. Spencer tells Marilla she needs to go and see this oculist that's going to help her figure out what's going on with her eyes, give her some glasses. And she's like, I'll be gone overnight. Are you going to be okay? And it's like, yes, of course. Yeah, she's like, I'm going to be fine. She's like, I'm not going to put any liniment in the cake and I'm not going to starch the handkerchiefs. And they just, you know, they're just sort of reminiscing about Anne and the funny little mistakes that she made as she was growing up and things. She refers back to Josie Pye. My freckles really are gone. And my friends tell me that my hair is actually auburn. She's like, except for Josie Pye. She informed me yesterday that she really thought it was redder than ever. And she's like, I've almost decided to give up trying to like Josie Pye. I've made what I would once have called a heroic effort to like her, but Josie Pye won't be liked. And isn't that true? It's like she doesn't want anyone to like her. She is purposely just a brat.
Or she's
Anyway,
super dumb.
maybe just super dumb. Yeah, that could be. So then Marilla brings up Gilbert Blythe. She's like, so I saw Gilbert Blythe in church. He is such a nice looking dude, you know? Then she reveals that she and Gilbert's dad had a thing. They were like, but she said that people even referred to him as her beau. So it was like they were dating. And Anna is like, oh my gosh, you have romance in your life. She's like, what happened? And Marilla says, we had a quarrel. I wouldn't forgive him when he asked me to. I meant to after a while, but I was sulky and angry and I wanted to punish him first. But I always felt rather sorry. I've always kind of wished I'd forgiven him when I had the chance. Great big hint that she just dropped to Anne.
Yes.
Maybe she should do the same. So, chapter 38 is the bend in the road. Marilla comes back from the oculist and he's basically told her that if she doesn't do anything that's normal, she'll be fine. Her and she won't go stone blind in 6 months. Like, she can't sew, she can't read, she can't do anything that strains her eyes, she can't even cry. And she has to wear her glasses, so it should cure her headaches and she won't go stone blind. And Anna's like, well, I mean, that's a little bit of hope. And Marilla's like, no, it's not a quality of life. I don't want that. Anne finds out that Marilla is planning to sell Green Gables to this guy from Carmody. And Anne is like, no, that can't happen. But Marilla's like, I can't take care of it by myself. You know, she's like, Rachel said I could come live with her. We can sell the farm. It's not going to be tons, but it'll be fine. And I'll have enough to live on. Anne was like, you can't do it. And so throughout the night, Anne had been thinking about this and she resolved some things. Of course, she was planning to go to Redmond to college on that Avery scholarship that she worked so hard for. But she comes to Marilla and she says, you mustn't sell Green Gables. Marilla says, I can't stay here alone. So Anne says, well, you're not going to. I'm staying with you. I'm not going to Redmond. Marilla is like, you can't do that. You can't give up your scholarship. You can't give up your education. And is like, look, after everything that you've done for me, it would be ridiculous for me to leave you alone and to let this happen when I can totally help you. And she's like, I can do basically correspondence courses. So our their version of online school, it was, you know, college at home. And she said that she was going to apply to be a teacher. Gilbert already had the Avonlea school, but she could potentially work in Carmody and be a teacher there. And so she's thought it all out and she's like, I have a ton of ambition and I'm not going to just settle. I'm going to keep moving forward and everything. But this is part of my path. She's like, when I left Queens, my path was just straight ahead and it was so clear. Everything seemed so clear. Well, now there's a bend in the road. And that's fine because I'm excited to find out what is around that bend and what comes next, you know? Anyway, a lot of people around Avonlea heard about it and some people approved and some people didn't. Who cares? Whatever. Then what we find out is Gilbert gave up the Avonlea school for Anne. Anne was just floored. But he took the White Sand, I believe the White Sand school. He totally sacrificed that for Anne so that she could be close by and wouldn't have to travel so much because he found out what she had done for Marilla. And he was like, well, this is something I can do for Anne, which is pretty amazing. A while later, Anne is walking along and she comes across Gilbert. I mean, it's a little bit awkward, but she doesn't know what to say to him. But finally, she drums up the courage and she's like, thank you for what you did for me. And he said, it wasn't really good of me at all. I was pleased to be able to do you some small service. And finally, he's like, are we going to be friends? Have you really forgiven me my old fault? She says, I forgave you that day by the pond landing, although I didn't know it. What a stubborn little goose I was. I may as well make a complete confession. I've been sorry ever since. And Gilbert's like, we're going to be the best of friends. And of course they are. They're like two peas in a pod. They're different in a lot of ways, but have enough similarities that they're going to be just the best of friends. And so they sit there and they chat for half an hour. And when Anne comes in, Marilla's like, oh, who was that guy we were chatting with for a long time? And Anne is like, well, it's Gilbert. She's like, well, I didn't know you were such good friends. She's like, we haven't been. We've been good enemies, but we've decided that it will be much more sensible to be good friends in the future. So we come to the very end of the book, and it's like, Anne, there's doors that have closed, but she's fine with that because there's other doors that are open. And she says, God's in his heaven, all's right with the world. It will be. Everything's going to be good. So, yeah.
I love that
You
ending.
think?
It's like God's in charge. And
All is well.
I didn't see this happening. I didn't see me needing to stay here, but yeah, this is gonna be, we'll see what happens. I love it. Makes me
It's
just
so good.
smile.
I remember when the actor for the
Died.
1985, was it 85? Version, when he passed away a few years ago, and everyone was devastated. He was pretty young too. Like, that was not right, but
We
yeah.
were all in love with him.
I know.
I know, I think I cried that day. Gilbert.
Oh,
And
what a
every
good
time I
role.
picture his like face, I think of, I'm like, he's not even alive anymore. So
Yeah.
sad.
Because he is, yeah, to me, he is Gilbert. Like,
Is. I
totally. So.
get to his little smile and like, anyways, he's so sweet. I thought of a couple of books that I've two books. Did you think of any?
Okay.
The first one is Marilla of Green Gables by Sarah
Oh.
McCoy. And it goes into the whole story of her with Gilbert's father and what happened with that.
That's right. You've told me about that before.
I love
That's
that book.
awesome.
It was really fun to read. So that would be a good one. And just like, I mean, because she ends up being a spinster and never marrying. And so you kind of get that whole story. And then the other one I have is The Grace of Wild Things by Heather Fawcett. And I've talked about this one too. It's like a retelling, but Anne's a witch.
Interesting. Okay. That is quite the spin. I
Yeah,
like
and I
it.
believe she's kind of under the tutelage of this like evil witch. And so she, I believe, kind of turns the evil witch better because she's Anne. Those were two that I've read that I thought were really fun.
There's actually a couple. Both of them I know we've talked about them before, and one of them we're doing this year, but one is Jane Eyre. Just because there's that whole like orphan, rough childhood trope and growing and learning, and eventually life turns out good. But there's a lot of trauma and hard things along the way. Jane Eyre is incredible. I love it. And then another one, though, that came to mind that's a lot more lighthearted is Caddy Woodlawn, just because, again, it's sort of this fun loving, adventurous little female heroine. She's not an orphan or anything, but she's just out of the ordinary. She doesn't want to sit and sew, and she doesn't want to do any of the normal things that are expected. She wants to go adventuring with her brothers and walk across the river naked and things like that. So, yeah,
I've never read that.
oh, it is so fun. I love it.
We're reading a lot of orphan books this year, though.
We actually are, aren't we? Yeah.
Don't know how that happened. Maybe all classics are about
Yeah.
orphans. I don't
I
know.
mean,
A lot of them.
maybe. Yeah, even because we're doing Huckleberry Finn, right?
Yeah.
That's also an orphan.
Jane
Jane Eyre's an
Eyre.
orphan. Is it in Persuasion? Isn't Anne an orphan?
No.
Are you sure?
Well, her mom died, but her dad didn't.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
I just read
Oh,
it.
that's right. That's right. Okay.
Lots of orphans. So next week we're not going to have an episode because it will be spring break. But the week after that, we will start with Much Ado About Nothing by William Shakespeare. And we talked earlier, we're going to do Act One and the first half of Act Two, wherever that takes us.
And I'm so excited because, well, I love all of Shakespeare. This one is hilarious. Love it. Benedick is like one of my favorite Shakespearean characters, and so is Beatrice. They're so clever and witty, and they're just at each other all the time. It's really funny. It's very good.
Well,
So
I hope I understand
I
it.
think that you will. I think, and maybe we should just put this out there. For those who maybe have a difficult time reading Shakespeare, one thing that I would recommend is to start with a children's version, just so that you get the storyline and you understand who the characters are and how they all relate to each other, and just the basic structure of the story. And then I would find a really good movie version, and there's really good ones of all of them. For this one in particular, I really enjoy, there's one starring Kenneth Branagh as Benedick and Emma Thompson as Beatrice. That one I really enjoy. A lot of people have an issue with how Kenneth Branagh carried out his Shakespeare movies and the directing. I don't care, whatever. It's really good. So I would recommend watching the movie and reading the play along with it, because watching them act it out, it really helps you have context and understand what's being said. And then maybe go ahead and try reading through the play on its own and see how it goes. There are those books where, like, side by side, they'll have the just pure Shakespearean language, and then next to it, it's like in modern language. Totally try that. Totally do it. I don't love that, but some people do. It's helpful to a lot of people.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm gonna try.
Gonna be
I could do
good.
it. I could do it. So have you been reading anything?
Yes. So not for myself. We have been reading The Landing of the Pilgrims by James Doherty, and he is an excellent historical writer. I've enjoyed all the books that he's written, and this one is a children's book, but it is not simple. Of course, it is simplified, but it's not just lame. Like, it's very good, solid history for kids. So, and it's all about the pilgrims starting out in England, then going over to Holland, and then making their way over to Plymouth and all the things that happen along the way. So, yeah, it's good. Good, solid intro to the pilgrims.
We're Presley and I are reading. Have you ever read the Millie Molly Mandy storybook?
No.
Okay. Well, I saw it on
I
like
think I've
a
heard of it.
saw it on a post about like if your kid is ready to graduate from picture books, like here's a list of books you could try. And that was the first one that came in from the library. So we're reading it. And so we've read two chapters. She's listening to them, so that's good. Okay. And then I just finished Jane in Love by Rachel Givney. Nan told me about it at our book club because we read Persuasion and talked about it last week. And she was telling me about it. And it was so cute. It's like Jane Austen gets dropped into 2020, which there was no COVID. So I'm assuming this was written before that. And that
It
was
must have
just
been.
the year.
Yes.
She's dropped into this, like, into her a movie. They're filming Northanger Abbey. And so, like, the actress that's playing, I think the mom or something in that movie is like, thinks that Jane is a hired actress to like pretend like she's Jane Austen. But then they kind of find, you know, she kind of realizes that she actually is Jane Austen. And Jane falls in love and then has to figure out if she's going to stay or go back to her time. And the longer she is here in like present time, her books start disappearing. Like,
Oh,
and
so
eventually
she wasn't there to write
nobody
them.
knows who Jane Austen is eventually.
Tragedy.
Yeah, so she has to go, basically she has to go back. But what's funny is that Carlina texted me and she's like, "Did you finish Jane in Love?" And I didn't even know she was reading it, and I was like, "Yeah, I finished it today." And she's like, "So did I." And she's like, "I didn't even realize that the man that she fell in love with in like present day, his name was Frederick Wentworth." It didn't even dawn. I mean, I knew the name Wentworth like the whole time, but then I was like, oh my gosh. So when she gets back to her time and writes the books, and supposedly Persuasion is like the most autobiographical, right? Frederick Wentworth is who she falls in love with.
There it is. Oh, I love it.
It's really cute.
Can't
But
go
like,
wrong.
I was like, am I dumb? And my friend and Carlina was like, yeah, me too. I didn't figure that out either. She's like,
Funny.
oh my gosh. And we just read Persuasion.
Yeah.
Like last week. We're crazy.
Captain Wentworth.
Oh, it was so good.
That's
Anyway.
how he made it in the book, I guess. Now you
Yes,
know.
it is.
The
So she
rest of the
came to
story.
2020 and she fell in love with this man named Captain Wentworth. And then she had to go back and write the book. So. It was very cute. It was cute. I liked it.
That is cute. That's a fun idea.
I really did like
People
it.
are so
Okay.
creative. I love it. We're so happy you joined us for this episode. We hope you will join us next week as we discuss Acts 1 and part of Act 2 of Much Ado About Nothing by William Shakespeare. If you have suggestions for books we should read and discuss, please email us at thebestbookspodcast@gmail.com. We would love it if you would leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. We want to inspire and encourage as many people as we can to read out the best books.
As Thoreau says, read the best books first, or you may not have a chance to read them at all. See you next week.